This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, September 30th, 2010.
Student assembly meeting, September 30th, 2010.
Here.
Pendleton. Here. Excuse. Smith. All right, moving on to approval of the minutes. September 16th meeting and September 23rd. Those were sent out to you last week. Are there any amendments or motions for the minutes? Seeing none, motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
All proclamation. Any dissent? Seeing none, the minutes from the September 16th and September 23rd meetings are approved. Moving on to open microphone. Executive Vice President Raymond.
Open microphone time, so if there is anybody in the room today, SA members or non-SA members, who would like to make a comment on anything that is not presently on the agenda, feel free to do so.
That's fine. We'll do announcements real quick.
Okay. Seeing none, the open microphone session is closed.
For the first announcement and report, I would like to introduce Rudy Byes, Dean of Students from the Free State University of South Africa, and it's really an honor to have him here, so thank you for being here. Next announcement and report, AAP and Residential Life Committee update. Oh, wait, hold on. We're actually going to move to the next part of the agenda because one of our presenters can't be here too long, so we're going to move straight to new business. Resolution 15, possession of pepper spray on campus, Executive Vice President Mensa, and community member drafting. So you have 4 minutes to present your resolution.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Constantine Sass, class of 2011. Thank you for allowing me to present this resolution today. The problem that we're dealing with here is sexual offensive conduct. According to the American Association of Universities, 20 to 25% of women will be raped or experience attempted rape during their college career. 40% of rape survivors develop sexually transmitted diseases as a result of sexual assault. 80% of rape victims suffer physical or psychological problems over time, and are 13 times as likely to attempt suicide. Thus, we think that these are somehow isolated from this national pandemic. Let's look at the CUPD statistics from our campus last year. During the 2009-2010 academic year, there were 5 reported physical sexual offenses, including 4 on the Cornell campus. But nationally, only 5% of 4 sexual offenses are reported to police on college campuses. This is quite an alarming number. Cornell students are fortunate to have one of the best police departments in the country, but these attacks can and do happen and exist when reaching a blue light telephone and waiting for several minutes might not be a viable option. Not to mention the attack occurs in college now, and you actually have to phone the police department. There is a better resolution. Pepper spray is an organic pepper-based compound which causes discomfort and temporary disorientation when sprayed at an attacker. Small enough to conceal in the person or pocket, the spray can reach to 20 feet away, allowing the would-be victim to avoid coming near the attacker, unlike most physical self-defense techniques. The attacker is then disoriented for approximately 2 hours, giving the victim plenty of time to escape and call the police. Furthermore, most sprays contain a tracer that can be seen under UV light, allowing the police to accurately catch and prosecute the perpetrator. And not to be discounted, unlike other solutions, pepper spray causes no permanent damage to either party. The current rules of pepper spray are as follows. All 50 states and the District of Columbia permit to carry a pepper spray for personal defense. 265.20, permits the possession of a pocket-sized self-defense spray device which contains and releases the chemical or organic substance which is intended to produce temporary physical discomfort for the use of self-defense as justified by Article 35 of the law. What this means is that pepper spray is a legal means of self-defense in Collinstown and above North Canton. In fact, a female friend of mine was assaulted on her way to Wegmans supermarket in broad daylight, and when the Ithaca Police Department did arrive, they recommended that she carry pepper spray. However, due to the current situation which we are here to rectify, students are not able to carry pepper spray to protect themselves on the way to campus because once they set foot on campus, property possession of pepper spray, much less abuse, which would have helped the poor girl who got physically attacked last year on campus, is prohibited. Instead, the administration encourages girls to carry a loud whistle or learn martial arts for self-defense. Cornell University's Code of Conduct does not specifically prohibit pepper spray use. Its carry on campus is prohibited by a 1996 letter by then J.A. Robert Brown, citing the Code of Conduct law banning, quote, possession of, or possession, carry, or use of firearms, ammunition, explosives, or other dangerous weapons, instruments, or substances in or on university premises. Like New York State, we recognize pepper spray as an object solely meant for self-defense. However, as reasonable individuals seeking to curb crime, not help criminals, we are strongly supportive of laws punishing improper use of pepper spray, just like learning martial arts for self-defense is not only permitted but encouraged by Cornell and by the 1996 letter from Mrs. Crowley, but any use of martial arts for criminal purposes would be punished. However, for many students, the use of whistle, martial arts, or time spent waiting near a blue light telephone are simply not satisfactory options. The young woman attacked last year, and everyone else on campus deserves a better solution.
30 seconds.
So in summary, physical offenses are significant problems on college campuses in Indiana. Last year alone, at least 5 young women were attacked. We are proposing that Cornell National College of and the rest of New York State and recognize pepper spray as a safe and effective method of self-defense and allow students to use it for personal protection instead of the status quo where criminals are the ones being protected. We recognize the university as a mission of safety to uphold and completely support a law punishing improper pepper spray use.
All right, just to clarify, I'm assuming that you all want to vote on this today? Or no, just questions? Keep it a new business? All right, so we will not be voting on this today. We have to leave, so still new business and questions only. So, Representative Feng. Questions only. Okay.
Do you have any statistics regarding like misuse, i.e. misapplication? You know, someone is approaching someone, but not actually going to visit them, but they get sprayed anyway. I guess what I'm trying to question is, you know, this is probably very vague, but statistics, you often have two different types of errors. Just wondering if kind of unintended errors, how often does that happen, so on and so forth.
Okay, well, there weren't any statistics that I would find on their own use of pepper spray. Like I said, a couple of things. First of all, if someone uses pepper spray maliciously, we support a resolution which would then punish that behavior. Also, the great thing about pepper spray is it does not, it's not a permanently damaging defense tool. So after 2 hours, the person does not have any residual side effects.
May I add that any woman now armed to carry pepper spray, although in violation of criminal policy, and we do not see any incidents where things are falsely used, but in the case that it was necessary to use it, we do not want these women who wore it, defending themselves to be punished by the university for a policy that not only goes against the state law, but against what we do with our common sense.
Representative Smith?
So, yeah, I'm very proud of the team that did a great job. But I'm just wondering, have you guys talked to the judicial or talked to Jay or anybody that actually did this? How far did anybody actually been, I guess, I, I, obviously there's violation of care, even if they're carrying it already, but if anybody has a disconsultation or anything from anybody, if they're actually carrying it right now.
So, 2 days ago, I paid a visit to our barnacle to speak with the CPD on how this issue ends. What I was told by administrators there is that when they do come, of course, individuals that are pepper spray, they have to come to this because it seems to be not well, because of other things, policy, the university did. However, I was also informed that the CPD would have no problem with the changing policy. It is just that they have to enforce what the policy is and the current policy that's changing.
Representative Danzer.
So from your
Representative of the Garden.
I really do like this on recommendations. My only question is, do you know of any other campuses that allow pepper spray? Did you look at just to see what other colleges allow pepper spray or don't allow pepper spray in the sport?
Yes, I think Trinity University and other schools do allow pepper spray. Most schools don't have a specific policy for or against it. And we don't have a specific policy. The only thing we have is that 1996 letter specifically tells students that despite New York State law as well as the law in every single other state in the District of Columbia, we're not going to be able to protect ourselves.
Was there a reason why? Does the long letter say why pepper spray wasn't allowed?
It doesn't give a reason. It does give suggestions on alternatives. Like I said, it suggests without carrying a lot of them instead of pepper spray and for learning martial arts. It also says that there will be a meeting to discuss possibly changing the current state, but I couldn't find any record of that meeting.
I would like to add, that pepper spray was once illegal here in New York State, but within the past 10 years, the law changed. Legislature realized that it doesn't cause criminal harm, and why are we going to criminalize in a defense act? They made clear that if it was used for self-defense purposes, but at the time of the time that the law was changed and the device was allowed to college campuses in the area, the JA reiterated that, at the time that clear that alcohol was here wouldn't have changed.
And again, I just want to reiterate that the current law protects the criminals instead of protecting people that are trying to protect themselves. That's what they're trying to change. And plenty of states like California, for instance, have clauses that say if this is misused, there's been such and such penalty for the community board.
VP Raps?
Yeah, I guess my question just goes off that just a little. Do you guys know the history why it's been banned on the Cornell campus? Is it just because of the New York State law? Was it ever allowed in previous years before the New York State law had changed again to ban it? Do you know any history behind that on Cornell's own campus?
From what I know, the New York State law has been a long-standing law. And, because of what the rationale was behind the JSA's office at the time, why they issued that one.
VP Nicoletti?
Thankfully, I was able to find the letter online so I can clarify to everyone what the reasons were. So basically, the Cornell community considers it a deadly or harmful weapon, as in the code of conduct, and that's what pepper spray is, so that's why it's not allowed. Obviously, it's a gray area. But they also felt that pepper spray canisters would be unreliable in cold weather. If sprayed into the wind, the effect intended to be assailant can affect the victim instead. Pepper spray, which is going to be part of my question, pepper spray may be lethal to those with asthma or other respiratory problems, and use of pepper spray for any purpose other than self-defense, a prank, constitutes a criminal offense. I actually think the benefits outweigh the costs for your resolution, but that's obviously not the topic for this week. My question is that the LA Times actually reported that from 1990 to 1995 there were 61 reported deaths from using pepper spray due to respiratory problems for these people. So who would bear the liability if a victim permanently injured or fatally wounded or perceived attack?
So, well, I just
want to
briefly address the reason that the cases that I did see, and again, you know, with all of these kinds of things, the focus is always on the case. Obviously, pepper spray is used a lot, and these are the specific cases, like everything else has statistics. The cases that the LA Times article mentioned is a police officer using pepper spray, and they have a stronger grade, more powerful canister than the individual, not the individual subjected.
All right, we have one more person on the speakers list. You'll yield? All right. That concludes our speakers list, and the time is essentially 5:05, so we'd like to welcome Dr. Weiss.
Dr. West,
misread that. Dr. West from the Learning Strategy Center. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. And I'd like to focus a little bit on the fact that we can look at ourselves as a community that has a lot of different factors. We can describe ourselves in many different ways, but in particular, we can look at ourselves as a community of scholars. You all, as Cornell students and all the students who you represent, are here because you have demonstrated great intellectual potential, thirst for learning and doing. And you're here among our lecturers and faculty, some of whom are with us today. Our faculty probably know Nobel laureates, Pulitzer Prize winners, yet another Genius Award recipient, Cyrosis, Guggenheim recipients, and in fact, probably every one of the faculty that you work with, judge with, who's your advisor, or who you come in contact with, is doing cutting-edge research in their field. There are very few faculty members on this campus who don't have a research component to their expectations and what they're doing on campus. And in addition, we also have remarkable staff who are dedicated to helping students reach the academic dreams that they are here to fulfill. So I want to ask you to do some thinking along with me and think on this for a minute. What is produced by Cornell's community of scholars? What do we produce here? You're a thinker. I'm not going to say your name, just stop.
Thinkers.
I'm sorry?
Thinkers. People
thinkers?
Who.
Okay. What do you mean by research? Do we produce research or is research just something? Does research produce something?
Solution.
Change. Okay. Have you thought about it in the sense of whenever you engage at the cutting edge of an area, whether it's something you're doing as research with a professor or perhaps a paper that you're doing in a class, you are not only gaining knowledge, you actually are in the process of creating new knowledge. That is one of the important things that our great university produces. And we produce new knowledge not just in scientific, experimental, laboratory type settings, but all across the world, in all sorts of disciplines that our students and faculty are engaged in and our alums. And so when we think about that, there is a sort of, set of characteristics that scholars expect other scholars to engage in. And this is one way of thinking about that process. Cuts across disciplines might go in slightly different orders depending on which area you're thinking about, but usually one of the key hallmarks is identifying an issue, a problem, a question, and being able to explain it, why it's important. And then the next responsibility of that scholar is to go ahead and collect evidence and evaluate it. Now, they may be at the point where they're collecting and looking at the evidence that other folks have done. You've done research papers where you've gone and you've had a look at the primary literature and get a sense of what's out there. And then critique it a little bit. Say, okay, so here's what I would say if I had the ability to interpret that evidence. I'm taking responsibility, and now I'm going to generate new questions, do some sort of research, generate new knowledge. And when I have finished my research, I will have what we call my, what do you get?
Diploma.
So, right? Take your results, and your results are truly the factual information that came from whatever it was you were looking at. And then what do you have to do with those results?
Publish them
with these world publishers.
Interpret them.
Have that as part of the paper.
Analyze them.
Interpret. You go back now and you say, what this means to you, how we connect to that bigger picture. And then you're oftentimes, at Cornell especially, obliged to apply it to important issues that are emergent in the world or sometimes with problems that folks have been trying to deal with for decades. The next and continuing responsibility of scholars. Look and see what the other folks in your field or broad field are coming up with and how that impacts the conclusions that you But in fact, for those of you who are perhaps here for your first year, you might be in that situation where you're facing some of the demands that you actually incorporate these ways of thinking into your regular way of thinking in your classes and beyond that, on exams and assignments, certainly. But also for residence halls, when you're talking to friends, if you're engaged in undergraduate research, and I'm sure hoping that you do it here, and that you actually bring to bear the testing out the evidence that people bring, that you're weighing it much the way that you did it in a respectful and very thoughtful way when the folks who preceded me here. So if these truly are the expectations that are now, they can actually cause among folks who are coming from a different way of learning. Oftentimes, high schools, even the best high schools, don't make these kinds of demands on students, and certainly not all the time in every discipline. And so the way you have excelled in the places that you came from, these other things to point out, whether it's a high school or another college or university, you can sometimes feel challenged. And it's not an unusual thing to have that feeling like your way of thinking, that what you used to do, that just produced and generated straight A's. And oftentimes, without a lot of work, let's be honest, you find you need something new. And sometimes we don't even know what it is that we're facing these challenges. And when we stop at LSC and we talk to students and we sort of try to keep track of what it is that ask us for help with, yes, there's content-specific information, but the biggest one is time management skills. And then, note-taking, how to get ready for a test, how to write a short essay test versus a multiple-choice test, procrastination, and some of his, ugly siblings are things that folks at the Learning Strategy Center are very experienced in working with Cornell students. And here's something that, again, been for a while, at Cornell, there are resources and services and folks and opportunities for everyone. But you've got to go find them, right? You've got to step up and up front. The LSC doesn't, go around and find the students who are perhaps struggling. Sometimes you can't even tell them they're struggling. They're great people are great, but in their minds, they know they may be doing something else. But it's really up to the students to come and do this. And so the Learning Strategy Center offers additional office hours to the ones that your course probably already has. We have free tutoring for all of the courses that we provide supplemental instruction for. We have supplemental instruction for courses like biology and chemistry and math, especially very large introductory courses. And we also commitment, smart enough to carry a community, what we want to do is make sure that we're spending effectively and efficiently so that you have time to take care of all the other priorities in your life. This summarizes some of those services. In addition to the reading lab, we have the statistics lab. For those of you who might be in the introductory stats class, if you don't know which one it is, you come to our stats lab and we can help sort of conceptual things as well as homework assignments. And so, of course, you use the Learning Strategy Savings Service. I want to share this with you especially because we did a survey where we asked, we engaged the students who were enrolled in the courses that we support, so in physics and in bio and in chem and so on. And we provide supplemental support for those courses. We reached out to students who were enrolled in what we call parent courses. Nearly 60% of the students who responded said they use the LSE services. They may not enroll in our supplemental course. They may have come by once or twice, but 60%. And they listed time management as the top thing that we help them with, as well as other sorts of strategies. And I want to leave you with a couple of other thoughts. One is that 65% of the students who earned better than average grades said that they had no problem asking for help, okay, when they needed. But only 25% of the students who reported earning lower than average grades. This study and those questions predate President Gordon actually being our president, and certainly predates his emphasis that we have on the ability to know yourself and know when you need to ask the question. And so this has been a time-honored part of the Learning Strategy Center. And numbers of the students we worked with, we had more than 6,000 tutorials, office hours, driving consultations, all listed up here, and we served more than 2,500 students in our supplemental courses and workshops. So I hope that in this, my brief remarks, I have convinced you that the Learning Strategy Center is an important component of our caring community because successful scholars in training ask for help when they need it. Thank you.
I'll go ahead and ask. We have another guest speaker, so we'll have two questions, and I'll have Representative Smith ask one question, and I'll reserve the question.
Thank you so much for doing this. It is wonderful to see all of these different services up here, but I'm wondering if there is a goal to broaden to actually get more students involved in participating in this. For instance, my college, the college I started planning, we don't have to take any of these courses listed on here at all. Is there any future plan to actually increase the number of courses for students to go in and, you know, I don't know if you want to say on demand, but ask for courses?
That's a really good question. Thank you for asking it. Historically, groups of the Learning Strategy Center are in helping students engage with and succeed in gateway courses to medical and bioscience type preparatory careers. And so we still very heavily have our foundation there. I will be engaging with our advisory board over the next year to talk about how we might expand or whether we should reconsider which courses that we are currently engaged in. So you can see my contact information on the back of the yellow trifold. So if you have suggestions that you want to send to me, I would be very honored to include them in that discussion. Unfortunately, in the budgetary issues situation that we're in now, we might be at the place where we need to cut back on something so that we can add something new. That's not just the Learning Strategy Center, that's the reality across the university. But I do want to hear from you if you have suggestions for us.
Thanks. I'll ask the last question really quickly. So in light of, the issue of mental health on campus, how has the Learning Strategy Center changed its take on students, and how is the Learning Strategy Center trying to address the issue of mental health from an academic perspective, of course, and helping students?
We've been allocating or reallocating as much of our resources as we possibly can to direct student services in terms of office hours, hire one more professional this year and support every single one of the four courses, as well as the auditorium and one of the non-major courses on campus. We also are very involved in making sure that we are offering the support when students want to. So last spring, for the first time, we arranged some office hours, mostly done by peers, but by our students during spring break, and we are preparing to do that again during fall break. Not that anyone needs to, but students who will be on campus, we're going to have some expanded hours things. So again, I would urge you to let me know if you have additional suggestions for ways that either the learning strategy mentor or other components on campus who deal with the academic part of your life and your colleagues' life can be thinking about what we might change around or bring on board so that we can be supportive of a really important part of the care community. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. And so next on our agenda is Mrs. Nelson, Zoe Nelson, from CU Office of Government Relations. Please. Welcome. Yeah, please take a seat. If you'd like to come up to the line, no.
But I can tell you, again, it's a great experience. It's a limited experience. You're there
say good riddance. Now I know that they're all nuts and everyone's all bad. Or, wow, this is pretty fascinating. I think I might want to do this for a living. Up to you, but it's a good riddance.
All right, thank you. And actually, I'd also like to see if we could ask you questions about how we could do student assembly business. Because I know sometimes we involve the SUNY, the State University of New York, how as a governing body we could use your office perhaps to address some of the issues that we deal with. So if you'd be okay answering questions for that as well. All right.
Thank you. Lobby for a whole certainly the money that flows through State University of New York towards statutory colleges that goes towards subsidizing state tuition but also for specific programs within contract speaking to do a lot of research for Department of Environmental Conservation and Ag Market children that we serve as well. We're trying to go to and probably to
all right, Representative Danzig, this person is here.
But they come and they say flat out, you know what?
my parents, you know what, we'll make too much to get A's. I wish I got some or forget. But there are students who could come today and they're basically telling stories about people, you know, friends of yours who are here who are getting A's and speaking to you. So, you know, so New York students are the ones who receive the bulk of the money. Then the institutional aid, we get a lot through students and even outside students, just for Cornell, for buildings, for programs, and specific colleges. We can talk about that too, but the student aid is the village.
Representative Bajaj.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm especially interested in the research program that you were discussing at the very beginning. I have a few friends that I'm sure a lot of individuals that are interested or be interested in the research program. Is there a good way that they can contact you or their website?
The best way, I have started sending an email, and I have a few applications that you can run through for the Senate and Assembly. I'd like to bring for each. I can send more to someone. I don't know if I can send you.
Yeah, please.
In the mouth. But I'll also be back on the session. And I call you again, you know, when I am. And we can have conversations about it. You can ask more detailed questions, that sort of thing. But yeah, so any email or phone call is fine.
Paper applications,
yeah. I have to double check that online. So
that's a
good one. Near any
All right. Thank you for coming today, and thank you. Moving back to announcements and reports. All right, moving back to announcement and reports. First announcement, AAP and Residential Life Committee update, Representative Smith.
So I've been at the change in climate meeting. I'm planning on Tuesday. We did very quickly the impromptu meeting we scheduled like the day before. Basically to address growing concerns about mental health and advising in regards to, you know, college students. So this would help for a lot of other college representatives if you want to get college student programs and initiatives that we're doing. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So I mentioned to him about how the engineering school is, of course, doing their degree program, known as the Respond Friends to Friends. And so while he did say that there is still a specific formal program that we're doing right now, simply because of budgeting, our college could grow. He does have a plan for advising, and he'll make an announcement. He said he's going to make a grand announcement about that in 2 or 3 weeks. He said that he probably won't like it. Students will, and that's what matters. Also, there's growing concerns about replacement for Trey Waller. Of course, Dr. Trey Waller left architecture planning for the engineering school. I mean, that's okay, but there is concern about that. Of course, hiring also more minority professors throughout the three departments. So as of right now, there are only 200 professors throughout all three departments, which is a bit of a concern for a lot of students. Also, we discussed the Brazilian Cities Program. If any of you are interested in going to Brazil in the summer, it is a Brazilian Cities Program, so you can study it. They are CRP classes, but they don't pertain specifically to like New York and stuff. It studies race relationships. It's in three different cities, British, Terra, Brasilia, and somewhere else that I don't remember right now. But you'll study lots of different things. You'll go to the favelas, you'll see different things. There is nice hotel. And we're getting more funding for that. We need a minimum of 15 students in order for them to consider doing the program and get enough funding. So if you're interested, please email me so I can give you Professor Curry's contact information. So that's it for oh no, actually I lied. Wednesday we actually had my first outreach activity, which was a barbecue that was co-sponsored by the Organization for Urban Regional Studies students. We had it outside in front of Sibley. It was a great event. We had architecture students coming out of Rand and then grabbing some free food and running off to an architectural lecture. And our students had to try everything. It was a great fellowship, great friends. So if any of you are interested in doing it, that this time. And URS 75th anniversary will be happening October 16th. Everybody is welcome to attend. There will be lots of free food, lots of events. It will be student work. So if you've never been in Sibley, you've never been in Grand City, you're time to go see what we actually do. And those flyers from the alumni have everyone for free. In regards to Red Flag, Red Flag Committee met
only one question once.
Red Flag Committee met yesterday. We just followed up
with the brief meeting.
Everybody else can go, but we briefly discussed following up on the main event that I've been talking about for the past week and the visibility. We got it's a great history on different initiatives that have been done. So we're gonna look more in depth on that. We also talked about the changes to the housing lottery system. Now we're open right now again on dissemination of the correct information about the house. So that is it. So if you have any questions about anything, read the blog or feel free to contact me, UJS3. Great.
Any other questions for Ulysses? Thank you for posting on the blog. Ears, Minds Matter, and Big Red Bike Update by VP Nick Letty.
Thanks, guys. So, reorganization, and thank you to the Appropriations Committee for staying for 2.5 hours. It was a long meeting, but I appreciate that. So I'm going to try and, just swing through these guys quickly. So, Ears, positive. These guys really provide a high quality service. But they do counseling services for students who have things to talk about, mental health issues and things like that. I think this year we wanted to just correct and clarify some of the errors that were in last year's committee report that said that they funded honorariums for current Cornell employees, which they did not. And we just would recommend that they increase their collaboration and share their wealth of knowledge with the community. Any questions about Ears? Okay, so Minds Matter, the other large mental health organization that we fund, they do more programming instead of Ears. Ears does more counseling. And Minds Matter also has done a really great job this year, as well as in addressing what the committee had said last year. And they're doing a lot more preventative programming instead of just reacting to events, which is obviously something that a mental health organization would strive to do. And we would just ask them to continue to evaluate some of their novelty items and their give-outs, and they may be unnecessary, and we'd let them decide. And the one thing that the Appropriations Committee did approve was their ability to attend the Active Minds Conference. Appendix B stipulates that the Appropriations Committee has to approve all conferences under $4,000. So are there any questions on that approval of this conference, which is about $1,000 to $1,500, depending on how many members they send? No, great. And the final one, which is probably the more interesting one, so a little bit of summary about Big Red Bike. So last year, the Appropriations Committee decided to basically fund this pilot program, which brings a bike share program to Cornell's campus. I think that this year they really made a lot of stride from their original analysis, and I think, there were a few imperfections in that analysis, but they've really cleaned it up a lot, and they've gotten a lot of outside funding from places like Transportation and Mail Services for $20,000, and COE who advertised them. So these guys are looking to place their first bike rack and 20 bikes in front of Uris and Olin Library by the spring of 2011. So it should be really exciting, and we're going to really work closely with these guys over the next year, and obviously they're going to apply for funding again. I guess one caveat is we're very uncertain about the future funding commitments that this group would need, because we don't know exactly where they're going to get their money from in the next year or two, and how much money they're actually going to need. So it's going to be a very interesting journey with them. Are there any questions about their advice?
How does that work? Is that is it like a pay per ride that thing where you swipe your card or something and you get a bike?
Right. So, good question. I think the Appropriations Committee is really dwelt on the plan for a while. But basically, it would be free per ride, and there would be 20 bikes. And it would work through the library system, and they have this online GPS tracking system with the bike, and it would be for a 24-hour period. You could take the bike out, and then, you ride it around and bring it back by the time period, and let's say that,
they know that you had the bike and then didn't appear, well, they charge you for the bike, and it would be a stolen bike, and they would be able to recover the cost that way. And in the fall, they're looking to place a second bike rack at Mann Library. And then third one, they're still trying to figure out. They've said it's a vet school, but I don't think the Appropriations Committee would want it to go kind of to graduate, even though, you know, we're funding it for undergraduates. So, anyone else have a question about it?
Well, I was just going to add about to the question. Basically, of the $220 student activity fee that every undergrad pays, what?
$260.
Oh, $260. I meant about.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That every undergrad pays every semester. What was it? $1 that went.
$1. So
basically,
$13,500.
Every undergrad is paying for use of it, since $1 of their activity fee is being allocated.
And again, that may or may not increase depending on what their cash needs are in the future.
Any other questions?
Oh, and next week, SASC appeals. That will be fun, and that will eventually reach its way to the SA if the group doesn't like the appeal, so keep on watch for that.
Moving next... All right, moving to the next agenda item, R16. We are moving it to business of the day unless anybody has any dissent.
Oh, wait, can I just use my...
All right, wait, hold on. One more announcement.
Sorry, guys, I'll make this short. I just wanted to let all of you guys know that we're going to... Well, I'm planning on meeting an ad hoc committee to further the Lift Your Spirits event that we had last semester. It was extremely successful, put on by President Andrews, Trustee Craig, and Alan Miller, President of IFC, and they basically brought all mental health organizations together. It was on the Art Squad, Free Candy, Cotton Candy. Everyone could pretty much just get rid of their stress for the day. President Gordon, I believe, spoke, Susan Murphy and Dean Hubble, I think, spoke as well. Very successful. Everyone was really excited that we were able to bring such a diverse group of student organizations together and really lift the stresses that are put on students daily through academia. Basically, I'm going to be looking for someone to chair the committee. I'd help you out, obviously, a lot, but if you're interested in doing anything like this, this would be a continual committee every semester, committed to putting on this program once a semester. The exec board already has the date picked out for it. So if this sounds like something that you'd really be interested in, we're looking for student leadership and we're looking for someone to get involved. So please come find me after the meeting. You can help me draft the resolution as well.
A question.
Actually, unrelated for Natalie, did you ever get the numbers for how well we did last week?
They get to come back to us. I'll get those out once I get them.
One more announcement. Representative Jenkins.
Yeah, one more small announcement. Has to do with, I mean, as the nominee, people read the article about the decrease in the microphone that came out. Ujima and organization in the league, we're hosting the Ujima Magna Fellows dinner this Sunday. I talked to Reverend Mike about it. And this is going to be like the first part of a series of talks to see if we can find us back out about the yield at my school and of all of our coming, or, you know, what is what's the gap between
the block.
Being accepted in the actual world. So our first talk is going to be at Intel Sunday night at 7 p.m. So we encourage everybody to come out and anybody to help out with that.
Thank you, Representative Jenkins. He did send something out over the essay listserv. That's why it qualifies as an announcement. Moving on to Resolution 16, Creation of Student Assembly Judicial Board Ad Hoc Committee, Executive Vice President Mensa. You have 4 minutes, yes.
I'm going to stand by you. I'm going to stand by you. Thank you.
And remember, this has been moved to business of the day, so we will be voting on it.
I'm really coming home to take a look at this group from this issue here, but basically what this comes down to is SA has represented only the graduates, and with the responsibilities that he has, you know, he overseeing about $1 billion per year, making it loan, you know, but, you know, and we pass resolutions that affect all students, and, you know, so we have pretty significant clout, you know, to get this thing done. However, you know, currently there is no real check on a lot of things that have happened and that could happen, and that the e-board is currently basically functions as the executive body of the SAB, and but they also have a judicial role. And so when issues concerning charter interpretations, bylaw interpretations come up, the e-board also hears those and finally makes a determination on whether an action is a violation of the charter and or into a bylaw. And so as an outsider looking at last year, you know, I saw some things that were very, very irritating to me, and, you know, we there were actions where I think it was clear some on the e-board were not applying the proper standards and instead were letting their personal feelings on the map get into how they voted in terms of determining whether a resolution or a bill or other action violated a charter or a rule. And just outside of that, even if we didn't have that, you know, the bottom line is that you have the board that serves as the executive and outside of that, who votes on different resolutions, different actions. We have the board hearing whether or not those actions actually violate the charter. I want to say, you know what, there can be times where the board will not be so likely to move that the actions that it has as an SA do violate the charter right there. And then, so there's a whole issue of conflict of interest and everything else. And just the level of bias that we have, I feel, is very unacceptable. And so many student government organizations throughout the country, they do have a judicial component.
30 seconds.
Okay. And this is an independent body. It functions differently at different colleges. And, you know, so this board here, my resolution is seeks to get an ad hoc committee that will look into these different issues and look at the different boards that are out there with the hopes of coming up with a model that the SA can adopt in terms of having a judicial board of its own. So.
All right. First on the speaker's list is VP Gitlin.
Great.
that's a little close to my face, sorry. Creating a new committee, so I'm like you to expand government. That's all.
VP Nicoletti.
Just with the last "be it therefore resolved" or "finally resolved" clause.
Yes.
So the number of voting members on the committee seems to be four.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know,
just I don't know if you want to make it an odd number.
I would assume that. I mean, I guess I can make an amendment. You know, that would say that I would have a vote. I mean,
purely logistical.
Right, right. You know, that's a good point, you know, but as of now, you know, since it's not very clear whether or not I do have a vote or not, you know, I would have to make a motion to amend this resolution to say to our read that the ad hoc meeting will be chaired by the executive vice president of the SA, Thomas, who will also be a voting member, and then strike in that, and then
put in place.
Additional voting members will consist of a member of the keeping on along the line. So thank you for that one.
Thank you, Ray.
All right. Hold on. We are now on the amendment, which reads after to clarify by the executive vice president, who will also be a voting member, and then and additional voting members consist of, that would be the amendment. The first on the speaker's list for the on the amendment is Representative Feng.
Actually,
can
I just speak on the resolution?
No, okay. Well, you'll be on the first speaker's list then. Is anybody to speak on the amendment?
Call the question.
Second.
Can I be on the actual speech list? I actually have a comment.
Sure.
Thank you.
You want me to withdraw my motion?
No. All right. We have a call to question. There is a second. Is there any dissent?
Call for acclamation.
Call for acclamation. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Moving back to the main motion, the first on the speaker's list is Representative Jenkins.
A question was,
Representative Danzer. Representative Brockman.
I think this is a good resolution. I think that a separate judicial panel or board or committee might serve a purpose, and it's at least worth looking into, which is all this resolution
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, that's the main purpose for this resolution here, so that we can talk about process and about how we would like this body to look like. Whether or not we're going to merge it with another body to just expand the authority of that body, or whether or not we're going to try to do something completely different. But so, yeah, I think it is key to point out that this resolution, you're not voting for the creation of a new board. You know, this is only saying that
30 seconds.
This is an ad hoc body that is going to look into the process and then bring back to the SA what was found. And we hope that, you know, we may adopt some of the findings. Call the question.
There's been a call to question and there's a second. We still have 8 people on the speakers list. So you still want to call the question? So is there any dissent? There's dissent, so we'll vote to vote. So if you would like to vote on the amendment, please start on the resolution, please stand up. Alright, please sit down. If you'd like to move back into debate, please stand up. The motion fails, we'll move back to debate. Next on the speaker's list is Director is VP Gitlin. What? He is on. I've decided to put Gitlin back on the first speaker's list because his first comment wasn't a speaker's list. But if there's dissent, I will move him to the second speaker's list. You dissent, represent yourself. Does anybody dissent?
That's what you meant.
All right.
I was just wondering if this could be, what? You know, also the job of the board members as a non-voting member of the student assembly.
Sorry.
If it can be sort of the role of the parliamentarian as well as a non-voting member of the...
I mean, what I was...
Or if it's not already.
That's a possibility, but this is why we have this resolution here, so that we can look at different models, you know, and that may be one thing that we say was that is worthwhile taking a second look at and bringing it back to the SA by the end of the term.
Okay. Representative Leonardo.
My question is already answered.
All right. Representative Kay.
Issue, I guess, with this is that we're, first of all, that we're creating a body in which we're spending time on internal affairs, and there's already a lot. We already have the VP of our internal operations, and we have our own review board, I guess. And I think that as just a freshman, I think that the student assembly really needs to reach out and spend more time getting together to reach out to the student body and plan events. And my other worry and question would be, how would the committee be independent if 4 out of 5 members are on the student assembly?
Sorry?
How would the committee be independent if 4 out of 5 members on the ad hoc are SA members?
So what I'm calling for independence on is the actual process. So if we do decide that we are going to have a separate body that, you know, figures issues of charter violations or other issues, that body, I think, is key to be in terms of having and in terms of talking about how the SA is going to perform itself. I guess, you know, I feel what's both here to have that sort of group as a member, you know, and, you know, again, this is open to any and everybody, and I'll be relying on different resources, including the Lincoln Mind Server and different services to advertise this, so that it actually gets out, so that we can get, you know, so that the word does get out there that we do have the app, if you guys get back to it today, so that we can have as much dialogue of different people as possible.
VP Rask.
I just have a question about how you think this is going to help streamline things and rather than complicate our decisions, because I agree that there is an accountability for the exec board to maintain its fairness, but what that would entail of a committee and how that would work.
So, you know, that's a good question, but again, I think will be answered after this is passed, after we meet and look at different ways in which we think that a special committee could be modeled. You know, some of the things that just think off the top of my head, you know, that I can see the committee doing outside of charter interpretation and everything else, you know, but currently in the bottom funded years, you know, the ASCOM hears a lot of hears and votes on allocations. ASCOM is made up of quite a few members, and if the group in question doesn't like its allocation, the group can then appeal to the SA as a whole. And those three members that possibly were voted no, who won the SA, they didn't vote in and they were
30 seconds.
My only problem with this, however, is just that there's no set plan right now. So we're basically giving you this power to create this committee that can pretty much do however they want to investigate, but there's no set structure. So I would recommend you coming back and maybe having a more definite plan.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Director of Elections, Stang.
Thanks. I think, in principle, this resolution is very, very good because it's thinking about devising an alternative check for the student assembly, providing an independent body to regulate this. But the way I see it playing out practically is thus, right? You create another layer of, I don't want to say bureaucracy, but I almost do want to say bureaucracy, because what you're saying is you're providing further levels. And I'm just jotting down some notes in terms of the checks we already have, right? We have a parliamentarian by goal, correct? We already have our SA overall body to check the executive board. The final check is administration, right? The administration and administrators that won't let us do anything like that. So I just can't see in a practical sense what this kind of check gives us beyond what we already have now. And I see it as potentially kind of dangerous. I know this is a long-winded question, but
right.
Go ahead and let me respond.
You know, and what I'll say to that is, you know, first let me reiterate, you know, that what if the six-pack shot today and what the use of the product would be, that is still up for compared to everything else. But in terms of our practicality and everything else, you know, I would envision the issue with ASCOM. You know, that's one thing. Some byline funding is where you basically have SA members get to vote twice. I don't know about you, but I don't think that gives those groups that come to us to get their share of their money their hearing, because they have already been told once by SA members who serve on ASCOM. Then they are coming here, they expect to get a peer here, and at the end of the day, they really don't. Because from my own experience, those members on ASCOM who did vote no, they don't want to change But I mean, that's a good concern, but I would just like to again reiterate, you know, that in terms of what this would do, you know, it's going to try to look at different models, and from as far as best I can tell from those government bodies that do have a
10 seconds.
Separate board, there is no clear line, you know, so I just want to put that up there, you know. I think it's a good check.
Representative Block.
Howdy. Okay, so you're someone who came here as an outsider trying to reform something. So obviously you value the fact that outsiders want to reform. So I guess, but in your plan, no one who's not an essay has any voting power, outside of one. So my question is, why is it better for the student assembly to reform itself as opposed to hiring students to reform themselves?
I mean, you know what? Part of that is that the SA does know a lot about how the SA operates and how we can be better. You know, that's our job to know how we operate. You know, in terms of expanding size or changing the composition, I have a problem with that. I don't want to get into a situation though where the group becomes too big, political wise, where we'll have people who don't come to meetings and then we can't meet our form. And yes, you know, but, you know, let's reiterate that this will be widely advertised to those people who are those who are not in the education. They're more welcome to come in, chime in, and that's what we really want.
Representative Cruz.
Thank you, Rachel, for bringing this up. It's something I didn't run online because I thought there should be more support yesterday. My question is, what can you do for the three additional students? Are they members of your committee? Is it decided by you personally? Is it more volunteer situation? What vision do you have for that?
I mean, you know, thanks for the question. You know, I guess, you know, I guess it would go to a staffing committee in terms of fulfill this PLC scenario. You know, now,
ooh.
There was, as I was in the charter, one of my responsibilities as a CDP is to I don't know about that goes there. I'm not comfortable with me being the decider of who, what message I'm going to get to serve this committee. So even if that is my power, I would definitely defer to Adam's committee.
This committee.
That staff committee.
All right. Representative Desai.
I share the sentiments of a lot of people. I'm going to say that I'm unsure whether or not we need this second check, like Charlie said, but at the same time, I am okay with this resolution. I mean, nothing in this resolution actually verifies any statements or opinion on what we need and what we don't need, allowing you guys to get together and do the research, which I see no harm in. I mean, eventually they're going to have to propose whatever they come up with to the SA. I feel like if you don't agree with what they come up with, then you should vote it down then, but at least give them the chance to make a recommendation. So on that note, I'm going to call the question for a second.
We'll call the question in a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will move to a vote on the main motion. We will go by, do you like a hand vote or do you want a roll call, right?
Motion for hand vote.
Motion for hand vote, all right. We're going to withdraw, we're going to go straight to a roll call vote, all right? If you vote yes, if you'd like to adopt Resolution 16 and create an ad hoc committee, vote no if you'd like to not create an ad hoc committee. Clerk, please call the roll.
He proxies yes.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 Yeah. Oh, no. Sorry. No.
Yes.
All right, by a vote of 14-7-0, the resolution passes. Seeing how that's the conclusion of our agenda, with 17 minutes to spare, I call for adjournment. All right, guys, we have one conferment to make, so we'll now be moving just to a 2-minute executive session to fill the last appropriations committee table. As in, we need to appoint the freshmen to the appropriations committee, so you all have to stay for 30 seconds. What? We do not have to move the tables, but please help the clerk collect everything. Get this all done.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.